Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 10 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the USDA WASDR World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report confirms a bit of an adjustment to the corn export number that based upon a short crop in Argentina, but that news did little to hold the grain complex higher in Chicago for the week. It ended on a poor technical note. We'll find out just how poor and if our analysts think there will be follow-through to the downside in coming days today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with University of Minnesota Grain Marketing Specialist Ed Ussett. Our panelists in studio today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Dwayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, let's start our discussion with this question. So you say February is historically a down month. Does that mean a move up and it's in the offing in March and maybe April? Wayne Nelson?
Well, Todd, there's a great possibility that we do see a little bounce back historically that way. I think this year is going to depend a lot on what happens to the European debt situation, if we can get that straightened around, number one, and also what the end of the month Outlook meeting tells us as to what we're looking ahead to and see if it does look like we're going to really be kicking things up. And then it's going to be a look at the weather and how early we can get in the field.
Dale Durkles?
You know, in the corn market this past week, it looked like we turned short-term cycles down and we're due to bottom that in early to mid-March. We had to get a bounce. But when you look at a broader 20-week cycle, it's starting to look more and more like that. January 3 peak was the 20-week peak, and we're down generally all the way into May.
And Kurt Kimmel.
I think it's kind of a moving target question, I guess, how low we go in here. But we feel we can find some type of low and have some recovery. I don't know about a sizable rally to the upside. As mentioned there are several things that's probably going to keep corn on the defensive here short term. But as mentioned, the number one thing will be spring weather.
USDA, WASD released on Thursday morning, made some adjustments, increased the exports, and finished up with an 801 million bushel carryover for corn. Futures finished the week like this on the weekly trade. March contract at a high of $6.52, the low at $6.28 and a quarter. Remember, that's the day open outcry and electronic trade for the week. March settled at $6.31 and three quarters, down 12 and three quarters from the previous week. I think that was a hook down in December futures, a $5.57 and three quarter settlement price, down 21 three quarters of a cent. And that one was an outside down week in the marketplace.
Technically kind of sloppy here. We had some hook reversals down, weekly reversals down. Momentum indicators are turned down. And as Dale mentioned, we've got some cyclical time counts that point to maybe some weakness here as we go along in here. So probably here short term, if you're a technical trader, up days or up moves are probably going to be sold here for the short term until we see some type of fundamental news to justify higher markets.
And it follows a technical down in the month of January for corn too, right?
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, as I keep mentioning to people, and I mentioned this, it seems like for the last year now, one of the bigger issues that the corn market continues to battle is wheat.
You keep mentioning, and it will be right eventually.
No, it's still there. I mean, wheat is still a big
issue.
I'm
just kidding.
And, you know, you go look at the USDA numbers we had on Thursday, and where was the bear? It was in the wheat. It was in the world. And that's frankly where we fed a lot of the wheat this year and continue to feed a lot of the wheat. And you know, you're sitting there with wheat looking at stocks-use ratios that are bordering on the surplus periods we had back in the late 90s and the mid-80s.
It is a big change from a couple of years ago.
It is.
And is that part and parcel the reason that we've been looking out into new crop corn and thinking this might be not as good price-wise as the past 2 years?
I don't know if wheat's as much a part of that at this point. It may be a part. I think it's just this persistent talk about big acres. And frankly, the statistics tell us we've got the land to plant out there. There's no doubt about it. It's all a matter of whether Mother Nature lets us do it or not.
You think he's right?
The big thing for new crop corn is, of course, the large acreage anticipated to be planted and the anticipation that we've been below trend yield for the last 2 years. We generally don't see that happen the third year in a row, but there are a lot of very big people that are saying it could easily happen. We're looking at some very dry conditions in southern Minnesota, northwest Iowa, different places along the way that could really hurt our trend line yields, whether we get there or not.
Speaking of dry conditions for corn, Argentina's crop by USDA was dropped to, 22 million metric tons. That was down 4 million metric tons, or 15.4%. It was a big drop. Did they get it right?
There's talk that maybe we've got some more room to the downside. There's estimates as low as 16, 18. That's probably a little low. I imagine next report maybe 20, then 21, somewhere in there. But overall, when you look at the big picture, world supply-demand balance sheet, ending stocks on corn are at the lower end of the range. Stocks-to-use ratios are record tight. And even the U.S. domestic number, 801 million bushel carryout, that's still relatively tight. And that's the tightest we've been since 1995 or even 93.
I want to take a poll across to each of you here on old crop corn. If you've got it in the bin or someplace that's not priced at this point, do you want to go ahead and move another increment or finish it off?
It depends where you're at. Right now, you should be pretty well sold up or priced. For anything you have left, I'd Vegas material. I'll let the dice roll here and see where we are. I like having a put option under us in case some disaster pops up somewhere in the world and see what happens.
You know, one thing you have to think about with old crop corn in particular is, and we're still holding them relatively well, we've got awfully good basis levels for this time of year, and you want to be skeptical of carrying cash corn, even on farm at that, you know, and you may be better off to roll the dice. We get a rally in here the next week or two. Get rid of the cash and try to figure out where to re-own it on paper. Again, take advantage of the basis and just get it out of your hair.
I'd have to agree with Dale. I think that we don't let these good basis levels go away. I think that we do take advantage of that. And I don't think it's a bad idea for some of these farmers that are hesitant to sell as to use some sort of option strategy to re-own the corn.
I've spent more than my fair share of time trying to figure out why basis has been strong for so long. Any answers? I haven't come up with anything that seems to be quite right just yet.
Well, Todd, I think number one is the farmer's flush with cash. He is not having to make sales. Number two, he feels that this crop is going to come back. Every time that he's sold early, why it's turned around and we've seen something happen. We have dry spots all over the world. We have some situations happening. And we have a lot of doubt in what our real carryout is from the government reports.
I think another thing that's really a little bit different in this go-around than we had, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, in the heart of the Corn Belt now, we have two engines that consume a lot of corn. We do have livestock still in the western part of the Corn Belt, but now when you get over into the eastern part of the Corn Belt, you got this constant engine of ethanol plants that keep absorbing corn and you have to feed every week, you know. So, you know, I think that constant demand, you know, is something that really is – helped stimulate, you know, keeping these basis levels as strong as they are. But I think what Wayne mentioned, you know, farmers being so flush for cash is just the biggest deal.
Amazing. It wasn't just a couple of years ago. We were wanting a congressional investigation for wide basis. Now we got a premium going here. So I guess the market works after all. But the bottom line is it's just a true reflection of demand. They're having to come forward and get some coverage. We kind of feel that they have the guideline is we don't want to get caught short like we did last year, and the urgency is to get some coverage on.
As we went into the end of 2011 and maybe into the beginning of 2012, The ethanol plants were simply steamrolling. They were moving very quickly and absorbing a lot of corn. Has that begun to back off?
Yes, it has, Todd. We've seen a few ethanol plants. I think ADM shut one down in North Dakota. There's some others that are cutting back greatly in southern Indiana. We know our plant in Linden, though, was going at over what they considered maximum capacity there for November and December, also through the month of January, and they are cutting back greatly, probably 30% to 40% of their grind starting next week.
If they're cutting back 30% to 40%, it's a deeper cut than that off the top of where they were, right?
Yeah, it really is. It's really back down to about 60% of what they were doing.
The other thing is, generally, when you look at profitability in the ethanol sector, when we eliminated the VTEC subsidies, operating margins went that zip. For an awful lot of people, they really crunched them real hard in there. And, you know, so you don't have the economic incentive to push your plant so hard. That's why we're seeing what Wayne's talking about here, people cutting back.
But the mandate remains.
The mandate remains. But when you look at it, the weekly production's fallen off a little bit in here, but we're building stocks while we're doing it. Kind of says things have gotten a little bit soft in that sector at this point. And we're still consuming a lot. You know, I mean, we're still doing somewhere close to 100 million corn a week. You know, I mean, so it's not like we've really fallen off the map. We've just backed off the pace where we were back at the end of the year.
One thing to keep in mind, too, is our southern hemisphere, we've not seen any competition there. In fact, we've seen exports to the southern hemisphere, and they're in line to probably have a good sugar crop coming along, too. So that could be a factor as we go into next year.
Soy complex now. March beans, 1247 and a half top, bottom at 1215 on the week. Settlement price just 3.5 cents lower, $12.29. November beans at 1239 and a half, up 2.25. When you look at the charts for the beans, they don't look all that bad, I suppose. What's your assessment?
They're hanging in there a little bit better, but this week's high, we did reach some resistance levels and kind of failed. But overall, the bean market held in there Friday and closed quite well, and as long as we see China come forward like we did Friday to be a buyer here, beans might be taking over leadership.
You agree with that one?
Could. You know, it really could. But
how much you want here? I got $20.
He's hesitant.
You don't have 10,000 like Mitt. But when you look at the situation, a couple of things come into play here. Number one, beans still are historically and have been cheap relative to corn, so yeah, that's one factor into play. When you look at South America, what are we focusing on in South America? We're not talking about corn so much down in South America anymore because we have had good rains in Argentina and things have stabilized there. Brazil, it looks like we're off to planting the second crop corn up north in pretty good condition at this point. But it's southern Brazil, and there's question marks still hovering around the edges about what kind of crop size we're going to have out of Brazil at this point in time. You know, we had out of CONAB, a 69.2. The USDA says 72. I think we're probably hovering somewhere around 70. And, you know, and if we stay dry for the next 10 days, like the forecasters want to talk about at least on Friday, you know, then you're going to have people starting to go, well, you know, is 70 too high? Are we going to back this down maybe to 68? You know, so we keep eating in. So that's holding the bean market up. Meanwhile, so one thing to be careful about here, one of the numbers that I thought was intriguing in Thursday's reports, the USDA lowered the Chinese import number on beans. Are things going to tend to stay soft over there? Is their business going to be as aggressive as people have been building in all year?
All right, so we can switch into the world economy at this point. We've got Greece still messing around in the marketplace. China backing off, maybe, according to USDA. Are you scared about the world economy still, or are we stabilizing?
Well, that depends on, I think, who you are and what you're saying where you're sitting. I think that the European community is in desperate measures trying to get things straightened out now. One of the news wires said on Friday afternoon that we're not seeing Greece, they aren't getting it ironed out immediately, but when have we got these things ironed out until it gets to crunch time? And they think it will get ironed out again in crunch time. We supposedly seem to see our unemployment number getting better. Is that a reality or is that the way the numbers are put together? We don't know. But the one thing that we can say is that everything does seem to be a little bit on the uptick. And the way that beans finished on Friday coming back, maybe there is a little strength in the bean market.
When you look at this month of February as it pertains to crop insurance, Wayne, to this point, And we're not very far in. We're well below what we were looking at last year.
Yes, we are, Todd, and that's rather disappointing. In fact, with all of our input costs going up, that we're going to be able to insure less on that. So, you know, but it is still above $5, pretty good, so it's not as bad as it could be.
You know, we're roughly halfway through February now, and I think the 20-day moving average, which is a good barometer on these corn, is like 565, 567, so we're probably going to end up over 5.5 anyway. And that compares to last year's 601. That compares to 1980's 540. It's going to be potentially the second highest insurance guarantee on record when you look at the corn market. And that isn't that bad.
That simply means what? Corn will be planted?
I think it'll be planted, weather permitting, especially when you start looking at non-land cost of corn production. Basically, good land, central Illinois, you're talking about something non-land cost a little bit under $3. Even in southern Illinois, you're talking about $3.20. How can you not plant land when you got an insurance guarantee that good?
You are listening to Commodity Week. Of course, it's a production of Illinois Public Media. It comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. In studio with us, Dale Durkles. He's with AgriVisor, along with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and, of course, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. When we come back, we'll talk with Ed Ossett. He is at the University of Minnesota.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It was another mild week in Illinois. The statewide average temperature for the week was 34.1 degrees. That's 10 degrees above normal. The statewide average precipitation was 0.5 of an inch, about 70% above normal. There were a few reports of light snow only in central Illinois, although the amounts were less than an inch. The combination of a warmer-than-normal December and January was unusual. The average temperature for the 2 months combined was 33.4 degrees, making it the sixth warmest December-January period on record. Remember last winter, the evil twin of this winter? The average temperature of that December-January period was 23.2 degrees. That's 10 degrees colder than this winter, and it was the 10th coldest on record. High pressure will dominate the Midwest for the next several days, bringing with it cold, dry air out of Canada. Highs on Saturday will be in the 20s with strong winds out of the north. Lows on Saturday night will be in the teens across the state. It's the same story for Sunday, highs in the 20s and lows in the teens. Temperatures will be coldest on Monday with highs in the teens with a chance of snow as well. Temperatures will begin to moderate by midweek. The 6 to 10-day forecast calls for normal to above-normal temperatures and above-normal precipitation for Illinois. The 8 to 10-day forecast calls for near-normal temperatures and above-normal precipitation. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the February 10 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel with Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. On the phone line today, Ed Ossett, who's a grain marketing specialist in the Center for Farm Financial Management at the University of Minnesota. He teaches there the futures and options markets classes and has written a book called Grain Marketing is Simple. It's just not easy. It was released in 2007. Ed, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me in.
I'd like to go through a couple of other numbers, and then we'll get to the questions with you. In the wheat pit this week, a settlement price for the March at $6.30. That was down 30 and three quarters. July at 6.46 and a half, 40 and a half cents lower. Live cattle finished the February's at $123.95. They were up 32 and a half. The March at 153.62 and a half. In the feeder cattle, were down 82 and a half cents. And lean hogs in the Febs at 86.85 were down 67 and a half cents. Mr. Ossett, You teach a class on marketing. You've written a book about it, and you like to put together marketing plans. I read in your blog that you like to start about 10 months out in front of the planting, I think, of the crop, or is it the harvest of the crop?
Before harvest, technically my plans will start on January 1 of a new year, but I'm suggesting to people I'm willing to price earlier, but I want a premium for that.
And what'd you do with this year's marketing plan?
Well, I do execute some for my mythical farm every year. I've been doing this for about a decade, and I posted my 2012 corn plan way back in July of last summer, and got a little bit done, a little over the $6 mark, I think around $6.10, $6.15. This is new crop December 12 futures, and of course the market is, I guess, about 50 cents lower right now. I also work in the wheat market, but in spring wheat, hard red spring wheat, not soft red winter as you trade down there in Illinois, and got that going in August. My tale of woe is soybeans. As I have blogged about, I had my eye on $14 in the November 2012 soybean contract, and I dragged my feet, and in fact, maybe we should quiz your panelists there. Where did the November contract, the November 12 contract, peak in early September? Does anyone remember?
Everybody's looking.
Yeah. They've got smartphones, Todd. They're going to look it up. I'll tell you, I was waiting for $14. It closed at a high of $13.99. and a half cent.
and you couldn't pull the trigger, could you?
Oh, my. I've
been there before.
Oh, my. And but I got something started in early January, not too far below where we are today, around the 12-20 mark. And, of course, new crop beans are about 20 cents higher right now.
Well, Ed, what would be your best futures or option recommendation right now for a producer to get some protection?
Well, I would, if we're talking new crop, I would simply look at the new crop contracts, July wheat, November beans, December corn. Even though the market is, we seem to be in a trading range over the last few months, and of course we're not as high as we were last fall, we still have opportunities that I think I know for Minnesota farmers, and I'm quite certain for Illinois farmers, there are opportunities above our production costs. And for that reason alone, I would tell farmers, you got to sit up and pay attention on some portion of that crop.
Ed, looking at a different twist in here and understanding we're roughly about halfway through February when we set the spring insurance guarantees and at the levels we're at, how do you think these prices, even though it's a little dry up there where you're at, how do you think the kind of price levels insurance guarantees are going to impact producers up there in terms of what and how much they plant?
Well, it looks good for planting corn and beans. I mean, they're anxious to get out there. We are dry up here. Very dry, but I'm reluctant to kill the crop on February 10th. Having said that, though, I think people are pleased with prices and anxious to get out there, and particularly up in the northwest part of our state, get it all planted this year and not leave, not have any prevented plantings.
You know, you said you've started your program. What percent have you sold of corn and beans? And when's your next idea? And how much will you sell at that point? I mean, you know, and what sort of goal are you looking for? Are you looking for $6 D's corn for your next sale? Or are you just looking for a time that you're going to do it?
I look for both. I ask people to put together a plan that has both price objectives and what I would call a decision date. A time to get it done, whether or not you make your lofty price objective. I don't have the plans right in front of me. I am roughly a third sold on my what I would call my APH yields, which is a subdued view of my production potential. So I'm about a third sold. I've deferred a few sales to the spring. That is, I've met my price objective in wheat and in corn and in soybeans for my next sale, but I've deferred it to the spring. That's just sort of a judgment call on my part. I know I'm taking a risk there, but I'm modestly encouraged about where we could go in the next few months.
I've got two questions. The first is, if somebody wanted to see your marketing plans, I think they're published. Where are those posted?
Absolutely. They're on our website, the Center for Farm Financial Management. I would guess you could, any one of your listeners, if you Google my name, Ed Ussett, U-S-S-E-T, and the Center for Farm Financial Management or University of Minnesota, it'll get you to my marketing plan.
It probably will. They'll find your blog first, but they have to go down until they find the University of Minnesota site, because they'll come to your personal blog to begin
mm-hmm.
with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then my second question is, how over the last decade the basis in Minnesota has changed with the advent of the ethanol plants? And for our listeners, simply recall that Minnesota is the fourth largest corn-producing state in the nation.
Mm-hmm. We're not Illinois, we're not Iowa, but we're right up there. We're a big corn producer. We were also, our state was ahead of the curve in terms of ethanol production. We've been a big player for more than a decade. Not to say that we haven't grown a lot in the last few years with every other state. It has changed the basis some in Minnesota, particularly around those plants. They are they generally pay higher than the areas around it, and they've been a good addition in that way to the marketing landscape in southern Minnesota.
And I was kind of hoping that it might give us some insight to what's been happening with basis this year and why the overs have been paid since the harvest time.
Well, I personally, Todd, I just think this is a tight year for corn carryout. It's really that simple. You look at the carryout numbers on corn, and we've got this sort of these macro problems that you speak of in Europe and Greece, and so many other countries having problems. That's sort of the wet rag, the wet towel hanging over the whole market, the futures market. Won't let it get out and take off in a bull market. But the basis is telling us that fundamentally it's a tight carryout. We had this a year ago, in very similar for us a year ago, in southern Minnesota. By June and July, we had overs like Illinois. We don't get overs very often. I know in Illinois you're about option price to 10 over in some places, maybe a couple cents under in others. We're at 10 to 20 under right now, and I anticipate, here's my famous last words, my prediction, but I anticipate that Minnesota will go over this later this spring or early summer also.
Ed, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Ed Ussett is a grain marketing specialist at the University of Minnesota. Google his name and you'll find a whole bunch of pages, and you can find his marketing plans too. Now for a final word from our panelists in studio, we'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel.
Yeah, I think having a marketing plan helps keep the emotion out of the marketplace. There's going to be a lot of noise out there and a lot of emotion and hype, so having a plan makes it a lot simpler.
Dale Durkles?
You know, the one thing that's important to keep in mind is corn prices are high relative, historically high relative to both wheat and soybeans. And that tells me that people need to focus real closely, because given that, corn has the least upside potential and the most downside risk.
And Wayne Nelson.
Well, we've got the USDA estimated meeting there in February. They're planning reports, so, and I think it's going to be very important to see what they say for their estimates on that one.
Our thanks to our panelists in studio, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. You can always find it again on our website. The address is WILLAG.org. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.